Welcome to the Sagebrush Variety Show, sagebrushvariety.org, political commentary and satire. On this week's show, we've got the Sagebrush Variety Show Farm Report on growing popcorn, part 6 of our current serial radio drama, Corporate Prime by Kevin Bayhouse, and a Homeland Security level red called No Fly. But first, Bucky Bacaw's Backyard Chicken broadcast on the economics of raising chickens for profit in your backyard. Them's the pickings for the show this week. I'm producer Gwen Sankirico. Enjoy the show.
This is Bucky Bacaw with the Backyard Chicken Broadcast. Recently, I ran into someone who wanted to come over and visit my little flock of chickens. I'm always glad when someone takes an interest in backyard chickens. I've already admitted many times that the nefarious Bucky Bacaw agenda is to get as many people as possible, especially suburbanites and city dwellers, to raise chickens instead of wasting outdoor space on lawns. But one of the reasons this woman wanted to see my little micro farm was because a friend of hers was thinking of getting her young daughter started raising a small flock of chickens as a way to make a little extra money, and that made me kind of skeptical. The thing is, it's pretty difficult, all but impossible in fact, to make a profit from a couple dozen birds. One backyard chickener from Vermont did a detailed but fun-to-read analysis of the economy of keeping a small flock and came up with a final profit of $2.50 per month. Even with a low-maintenance flock, spending 15 minutes or less per day on the flock, like this person, it's simply not worth the time if a money-making opportunity is what you're looking for. For a link to that website, see the Bucky page at sagebrushvariety.org. Now, don't be confused. I absolutely believe everyone with a modest amount of outdoor space at their disposal will improve their own lives and help the health of the planet by inviting chickens into their backyards and lives. As I always say, backyard chickens will till and fertilize your soil for gardening, get rid of bugs without the use of pesticides, provide you with eggs that are proven to be more nutritious and better tasting than the grocery store variety, and also provide great entertainment and companionship. Caring for chickens on a small scale is a relatively easy and hassle-free way for people to reclaim a degree of self-sufficiency in their lives. But doing it for profit is almost sure to end in frustration. How do the factory farms manage to turn a profit where you can't? As I've told you before, they cram their chickens together in densities that boggle the mind. They feed them the cheapest stuff that can sustain them, including a lot of dead animals from the very same chicken factory or other sources, kill hens as soon as they are past peak production, and use a variety of artificial means, from round-the-clock lighting to hormone injections, to maximize fertility. There's no way someone with a dozen or even a few dozen chickens and any sense of decency towards their animals is going to compete with the factory farm price of $1 or so for a dozen eggs, even if your eggs are tastier and better for the consumer. There was a time when a farming family could raise a small supplemental income by selling eggs to people in town who didn't raise their own chickens, but that was more or less a century ago, before the industrialization of food production and distribution. In one of my favorite references, The Chicken Book, by Paige Smith and Charles Daniels, the industrialization of chickens and eggs are described in fascinating, if horrifying, detail. When I hear people planning to make egg money with their backyard farms, I can't help but think of the great chicken farming rush of Petaluma, California, in the early 20th century. Hopeful chicken farmers, many of them attempting to escape the cities and 9-to-5 office job routines, that probably sounds familiar, poured into Petaluma to start their own ranches, using a sort of Petaluma method, which featured all the early developments in the industrialization of farming, such as mechanization and a bit of crowding, which was believed to be an all but guaranteed formula for success. And for a while, it was a guarantee for success, but mostly because, just like the dot-com boom, this boom fueled itself for a while through supporting businesses and pyramid schemes. But in a little over a decade, the small operations had closed. In the end, the only real moneymakers were the mechanized hatcheries that turned out thousands of baby chicks for sale to new farmers. That moment in history marked the beginning of the end to the concept of small income-generating farms that had any chance of competing with factory farms. Today, we spend only 10% of our income on food. In 1950, we spent 22% of our income on food. And in 1935, a moderate income farm family spent 47% of their total living on food. The real cost of that change, however, is that much has been lost in terms of flavor and local variety of food. Contemporary, non-organically grown foods are less nutritious than the vegetables, fruits, and meats of pre-industrial agriculture, and we now routinely are exposed to pesticide residues, antibiotics, hormones, and other chemicals as a byproduct of nearly every meal. And worst of all, your options for acquiring food grown the pre-industrial way dwindle as factory farms crowd out the last of the small farms. The good news is that you can still reclaim your right to healthy food and your connection to the land, even in a suburban or urban yard, by becoming part of the do-it-yourself permaculture movement. And the even better news is that you can transition in steps. You don't have to sell your house or quit your 9-to-5 job and learn to farm overnight. You can start in your own backyard with a small organic garden and a couple of hens. You can free yourself from worrying about the profitability of your efforts and focus instead on the self-sufficiency you gain, which in my experience may save you so much money that it feels like earning. It's legal to keep small flocks of chickens in more places than not, even larger cities like New York City, San Francisco, Houston, and Portland, the unofficial capital of North American urban chickening. Look at your city's code online, call the city clerk or your animal shelter to find out. This is Bucky Bacall signing off. I had a good time. Bucky Bacall's Backyard Chicken Broadcast was produced by the Sagebrush Variety Show with support from Boise Community Radio and the Green Institute.
The Sagebrush Variety Show players started gardening several years ago as a reaction to pesticide-laced and genetically modified foods, from a desire for self-sufficiency, but mostly from an intense dissatisfaction with ingredients that were shrunk-wrapped, refrigerated, and trucked across continents. Until recently, however, our civic activism in leisure time took priority, and our gardens often suffered. This year, big agribusiness has grown more and more predatory in their attempts to monopolize food production and have upped their use of pesticides and questionable genetic technologies, while simultaneously entering the organic food market only to chip away at the standards as well as the values of that movement. So this year, our garden is part of our activism. After all, we always said that a major part of the Sagebrush Variety Show agenda is to make inedible lawns, and the pesticides, water waste, and obnoxious lawnmowers that make them possible an object of derision and scorn. Still, while to us everything, and we really mean everything, is a political act, we will admit that the pleasures of cultivating our own food from seed to table appeals very much to our simple hedonistic side, as well as being good for our health and the health of the planet. And if peak oil hits as hard and fast as our advisors are saying it will, gardening expertise will soon be a survival skill. So this is a nonpartisan issue, if there ever was one. The pick of the week for today's show is Cherokee long-ear popcorn. The way popcorn works is that as the kernel is heated past the boiling point, regardless of method of heat delivery, the water in the kernel begins to turn to steam, generating an internal pressure which builds until the hull suddenly explodes and turns the kernel inside out. Unpopped kernels either do not have enough moisture to create enough steam to pop, or may have a leaky hull that vents the steam rather than exploding. Few, if any, other grains can do this because their outer hull, or pericarp, is not as thick and impervious to moisture as corn's. Moreover, certain varieties of corn do it better than others. Distinct popcorn strains were first developed by Native Americans thousands of years ago. In 1948, popcorn ears dating back 5,600 years were discovered in bat caves in New Mexico. Popcorn was introduced to the Europeans in the late 15th century, when Christopher Columbus noted that the Native Americans made popcorn corsages and popcorn headdresses, which they sold to Columbus's sailors. French explorers around the year 1612 in the Great Lakes region documented use of popcorn by the Iroquois, who popped corn in pottery using hot sand. We chose popping corn as a crop, thinking it would be a little more interesting than the usual on-the-cob fare. We love Corn on the Cob as much as the next variety show producers, but reading Organics Inc. this summer temporarily turned us off corn, a side effect of learning about how farm subsidies for corn actually hurts farmers, as well as leading to the excess of cheap but unhealthy processed foods in the supermarket, snack, and even so-called health foods filled with corn products high in carbohydrates and low in nutrition. Of course, corn is a noble food and has been an important and life-sustaining crop for indigenous Americans for ages. If we were to properly explore the biology, history, and culture of corn, we'd have to grow several varieties and spread out our reports over a few broadcasts. We didn't boycott corn because of the abuse of the plant as a commodity. We just couldn't get as excited this summer about looking out our windows at rows of corn and thinking about what we'd read. We've also shied away from popping corn at home ever since the genetically modified Starlink corn that was supposed to be kept out of human food channels due to its tendency to cause severe allergic reactions managed to pollute the mainstream corn supply and everything from taco shells to popcorn. On the other hand, the Cherokee long ear popcorn we grew was an heirloom variety that we felt confident hadn't been exposed to genetic drift and would also give us something we could look forward to watching grow as it promised to have a distinctive look from its early stages with its colored tassels, relatively short stalks, and delicate ears, as well as after harvest with its kernels in an array of shiny colors, including red, blue, orange, white, and yellow. We decided to grow corn late and planted it in a problematic spot, so our yield was not impressive, but the small kernels we collected surprised us with their relatively large pops, and the difference between fresh and store-bought popcorn is notable. We're glad we planted it. Here are our reactions.
It tastes like popcorn, very fresh popcorn, and the exploded hulls are brittle and crunchy, and they don't get painfully stuck in your throat the way regular popcorn kernel hulls do. I've never been one to eat the unpopped kernels, because to me, they are not discernible from smooth gravel, and I prefer not to break my teeth. But with these delicate hulls, you can just bite through them. The popped kernels are crispy with good flavor.
These charming little kernels pack a perky wallop. Dense and slightly grainy, yet still delivering a whimsical breeze of puffed-up festivity. This is a popcorn sure to re-enliven any evening gathering.
This Cherokee heirloom popcorn carries a traditional flavor and texture of most popcorns, but there is something special about it still, as it bears a proud banner of its name. The kernel's colors are refreshingly diverse and should remind us that assimilation in this nation has never been a jolly time.
If you like what you hear and want more information on growing this or other crops, visit our website at radioboise.org/sagebrush or email us at sagebrush@radioboise.org. Or, if you're already gardening, we'd love to hear what you're growing and eating and how you and your companions describe the experience. Tune in next week for more Sagebrush Variety Show farm reports. And remember, say no to corporate food.
You're listening to the Sagebrush Variety Show, political commentary and satire with an irreverent twist.
Four months ago, I was living a whole different life. I was a security officer for the Corpy City in the eastern part of Cascadia in the now defunct United States. It used to be the world's superpower until the oil wars that ensued a few decades ago. The wars were brought on by the decline of oil availability. That spurred all the world's military powers to hoard as much remaining oil and gas reserves as possible. Civil war reduced all of these countries to fractured has-beens. Within each nation-state, people warred with themselves over the table scraps of the natural resources needed to continue their decadent lifestyles. Life turned very dark after the oil wars left charred remains of what was once a functional society, smoking in the ruins of capitalist enterprise. I've been through a lot the last few years, but I probably shouldn't complain. I'm not sure there's any such thing as the easy life anyway. Lately I've been thinking we're better off without it. My name is David Ortega, and this is my story.
Morning, David. Are you awake?
Yeah, I'm up. What time is it?
It's almost 9. I thought I'd give you a wake-up visit.
I was having bizarre dreams.
Good or bad?
I'm not exactly sure. I usually sleep like a dead man, but last night it was like my subconscious was assaulting me with every forgotten thought in my head. Was there anything funny in that beer?
No, but it sounds like you had some wrestling with your conscience. Listen, David. Lenny is going to come by in a few minutes with some breakfast for us. I wanted to talk to you before he gets back.
I want to tell you a few things, too.
Oh, yeah? Well, I just wanted to say that although I was asked to watch you and get information from you, I never said or did anything I didn't mean. Other than not telling you I was spying, I was being myself with you.
I was a little hurt when Lenny told me you were spying on me, but I realize I have no right to feel that way since I was sent to help blow up your dam.
Lenny told me you really didn't know about that.
Really, I didn't. And I wouldn't have knowingly helped Corporate Prime do anything like that. I couldn't justify taking any offensive action against this community, especially with people like you here.
Then you'll really help us stop them?
In the few days I've been here, I've changed. Or maybe my true self is finally waking up. I don't know. I want to redeem myself, Monica. I'll do anything you ask.
I'm glad to hear that. We really need you. If we succeed in stopping the breach, you can settle here and make up for all the lost time you spent in the Corby town. I came from a Corby town, too. So I know what you're going through. All the adjustments and radically different ways of going about things. I really felt awkward at first. But I promise you that you will never regret turning your back on Corporate Prime.
As long as we...
Breakfast, anyone? Get off that bed, both of you. We're saving the world today. Part of it.
Silly, have we heard from Ortega yet?
Not yet, sir.
What's the holdup?
I don't know, but we got a report from the strike team. They're still moving around the dam, avoiding Aggie search teams.
Tell them to get on with the objective. They're ordered to take out the dam.
Are you sure you don't need Ortega to get the maps to the team first?
If Ortega hasn't checked in like he was supposed to, we have to assume the worst. We have enough information to strike now. If Ortega does check in, tell him to return to Corporate Prime.
Understood.
Let me know when the strike team initiates the assault.
Yes, sir.
So where are we headed?
Oh, you're about to find out. We're here.
What's here?
In this old building is... Well, just come with us. We'll use the back entrance downstairs. Yeah, bring the bikes.
Looks pretty run down.
That's what you're supposed to think.
Why don't you do the honors, David? Take this and hit this pipe. Two long, two short, one long.
Are you playing with me?
I'll do it. Give it to me.
All right.
Stand back a little.
Whoa, the old disguised door trick. I really thought this was just a pile of junk.
You like it?
I think I saw something like it in a video at Corby Town. Abbott and Costello meet the mummy.
Is that where you got the inspiration, Lenny?
Can we not stand around? Come on. Monica, pull the door closed. Hey, Pat, look what we brought you. A guest.
Well, hello, David. How nice to see you've joined us. You have joined us, right? Or have you been taken prisoner?
When was the last time we had to take a prisoner, Pat?
Come on, let's go. Pat, can you come help us and get someone else to watch the door?
Of course. I just came up for a little break when I heard you might be bringing a new recruit.
Okay, let's go.
What are we doing here?
What you're about to see... Careful, don't trip on that torn-up carpet down this hallway. What you're about to see is our fully equipped radio communication center. Watch that step. Here we are. Hey guys, how's it going? Victor, could you go watch the door? We need Pat down here for a little while.
Sure, Lenny.
Thanks. David, this is where we monitor radio communications. It's our first line of defense from threats like this latest mission coming from Corporate Prime. It's solar and hand-generated like the public stations you've been visiting so much, but we get first dibs on good equipment.
Are you monitoring your own people? Like a Corpytown?
Unlike Corpytowns, we respect people's right to privacy, but everyone knows that the radio airwaves are a public space. It works out to our advantage that Corporate Prime has the hubris to imagine that they exclusively control radio frequencies and the means to hear them.
Pat, how strong was that last transmission this morning?
45 watts. We're still working on triangulating their position.
Is the dam secure?
Not quite. We don't have enough people up there yet to properly guard all of the entrances and conduct proper searches. We're getting more people soon. A couple of harvests finished up today. But they won't be here until tomorrow.
Can you join us up there, David?
I'm ready to go if you're ready to trust me.
We have no choice but to make that leap of faith. But I'm sure you'll prove yourself worthy.
You can start right now, David, by contacting the assault team and keeping them talking long enough so we can get a good fix on their position.
Okay.
I'll tell our people to start a trace. Hold on. Razor One, this is Porcupine. Are you ready? Over.
Affirmative, Porcupine. Over.
Razor Two, are you ready? Over.
Affirmative, Porcupine. Over.
We have two teams with radio direction finders ready to locate them.
I thought we had three.
The third finder gave out, so two will have to do. Don't worry, we can narrow it down to two points with only two coordinates. David, when you contact team leader, keep him transmitting as long as you can so we can get a fix and map him, okay? I trust you know your way around one of these units?
Yes, indeed. Here it goes. Big Brother, this is Nomad. Over. Big Brother, do you copy? Over. Big Brother, this is Nomad. Over. Do you read me, Big Brother? Over.
Copy, Nomad. This is Big Brother. Where have you been? Over.
I couldn't get away from people. I've been doing recon for those heavy weapons. Over.
Roger that, Nomad. What did you come up with? Over.
Big Brother, I found some items of interest. Over.
What should I tell him?
I think they suspect we have some light armored vehicles. Over. Use that to improvise. And do a better job at lying to him than you did to me, will ya?
Some light armored vehicles. Over.
Wheeled or tracked. Over.
Wheeled. Over.
Were they armed? Over.
Light and heavy machine guns. Over.
Any heavier items? Like artillery. Over.
Some mortar pieces of various sizes. Over.
How many pieces? Over.
I saw about 20, maybe 30 pieces. Over.
How did you locate them? Over.
Say again. Over.
How did you locate them?
Some drunk guy tipped me off to where they were kept. Over.
Excellent work, Nomad. Anything else? Over.
Can you get him to boost his signal?
Big Brother, you're breaking up. Can you increase the power in your transmitter? Over.
Can do, Nomad. How's this? Over.
Very nice, Big Brother.
Much better, Big Brother. Can you repeat that last question? Over.
Did you see any other heavy weapons? Over.
They're refurbishing a portable howitzer. Over.
Good find. Over.
That's all, Big Brother. Over.
Good enough. We'll relay to Castle. Over.
Understood. Are you going to retrieve my maps? Over.
That's a negative. Over.
Why not? Over.
Castle changed mission priorities. Just pack up and head out of town within the hour. We'll catch up with you on the way back to Corporate Prime. Over.
I don't understand. Over.
You have your orders. Over.
Roger, Big Brother. Over and out.
Big Brother, out.
How was that?
Great work. Our two teams already radioed in their coordinates. I'm plotting them right now.
Great. David, Monica, are you ready to go?
My gear is already packed.
I need to get my stuff from a hiding place.
No need.
What?
Be a dear, David, and hold this ladder for me. I've got a touch of acrophobia. Okay, here we go, on the top shelf. Your gear. We took it from your hiding place yesterday.
I'm hoping this will be the final humiliation of my former career as a spy.
Fair is fair.
Yeah, I know. Let's go kick some corporate butt.
Hey, Sam, are you base coordinator?
I am. I'm surprised you hadn't heard.
This is David Ortega. We're here to help you find the assault team.
We also brought two more VICs.
Has anyone told you what that stands for?
I'm gonna guess Volunteer Combat Squad.
I heard you were sharp, Ortega. I'm glad you're on board. And you're just in time. We need VICs bad. We could use more, but we're lucky to get two during the harvest season. Hey, what do you know about the American Revolution?
I saw a musical about it in Corpytown. It was 1776.
Well, listen, I teach history at the community center. When all this is done, you should sign up for a class. Anyway, there's challenges to going into combat with the part-time army of farmers. Did your Corpytown people realize how crippled we'd be by the timing of this attack?
I think they just got lucky. We don't know much about real farming. Just chemicals, hydroponics, and salvaging old canned goods.
Why? Don't they know that's really not the most efficient use?
Sam, I'm sorry, but we don't have the...
Right, Monica. Okay, listen up, everyone. Did the VIC select coordinators on the way here? I hope.
Yes.
Okay, great. I want both groups over the dam to the south checkpoint. Pat is checkpoint coordinator. She'll assign you a spot on the security grid. Someone had the foresight to bring most of our working bicycles from the village. You can use them to get across quickly.
Okay, let's go. Hey, can we not agonize over our bike selection? They all work. They do, right, Sam?
Of course.
Come on, everyone. Seriously. Most of these people were in the same work crew as me. I swear, once things get heavy, they'll get serious.
I'm sure they will.
There should be more people here tomorrow, possibly even late tonight.
Good. We'll need him to shore up the perimeter. We've got it covered pretty well, but it's the nighttime I'm worried about. If that strike team slips through, they may use a raft to get to the dam. It's difficult to watch the water and all the other approaches with the number of people we have up here.
When we left the radio center, you had a good fix on them. Have they evaded you?
I don't think so, not yet. It really helped narrow the search grids down for the three teams we've got out there. I was told we've got you to thank for that, David.
Don't thank me yet.
David's really coming through for us. He's just not used to praise.
Let's get over to the other side.
Are we taking that, car?
That Jeep? No, it stays here with the guys on guard duty. You can see it has a 50 caliber heavy machine gun. It's the only heavy weapon we have over here. We've got three more on the other side from where we expect the attack. We'll use these bikes to get around here for the most part. Pat, this is Monica Claiborne and David Ortega.
Ortega, thanks for lending us a hand and welcome. Mwah.
Battle coordinators greet each other with a kiss in this army, David. Where's mine, Pat?
Pat, I didn't recognize you in all that gear.
They need me up here so badly they sent a Jeep for me. Thought I'd dress for the occasion. But seriously, things are getting kind of scary right now. I hate to break your heart, but I'm not going to flirt with you till we get through all this. Besides, it makes the VIX jealous.
Right.
He's speechless, Monica. Not that there is much difference from his usual taciturn self. Okay, come on, guys, I want to show you some maps. Hold on, I don't go anywhere without my radios. We may need them later, but for now they make great paperweights in the wind. As you know, we fixed their position right here. That spotting scope on that tripod there is set on the same line. We've assumed that they moved since, but our teams have closed in to surround them.
If I were them, I'd try to make it to that draw and work my way down the water's edge to the plant.
That's what we think they'll do as well. If they make it to the draw, we want them to make an attempt for the electrical plant.
That's pretty risky. They might try to use a raft or swim after dark when they won't be seen.
That's why we open the turbine gates and make a water approach impossible at night. We close them during the day to bait them. We've got just enough people to watch the approaches during the day. Nighttime's the challenge.
I see your problem.
Night gives them a huge advantage. We've got a waxing quarter moon, but we can miss them if they move carefully enough.
They also might try to decoy us by splitting up and hitting us from the reservoir side.
Another reason why we need more people.
David, you said us. You seem to have made a transition.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
He likes us.
Would it help if I try to contact the assault team again?
The search coordinator suggested that, but you already told them you would leave town. If you're going to contact them, you need to come up with a pretty elaborate story. You were caught, escaped, somehow found a radio, etc., etc. They might not buy it. So maybe we should hold off on that.
What's the difference between a VIX coordinator, a checkpoint coordinator, and a search coordinator?
Why, just like it sounds. I know if you're from a corpy town, it seems impossible that everyone's in charge, but the truth is we're all coordinating together. Part of what we learned in self-defense training is how to work together without strict leadership hierarchies.
You guys have been right every other time you've turned my beliefs upside down, so, okay. So what's the search coordinator doing specifically, right now?
He's out over those hills with the Skomervol team, aka Razor One.
How many people do you have out there?
Skomervol has 29. The Hedgehog team had to be broken up into two sections, Razor 2 and 3, 18 people each. Another team would be nice as a buffer.
David and I could take a few and make the best of it.
I might have you do that.
Occupied. This is Razor 3. Over.
Go ahead, Razor 3. Over.
We've sighted Corpies. Over.
What's their location? Over.
Grid, Charlie 10. Moving toward river. Over.
Do you have a count? Over.
I think we spotted 3, maybe 4. Over.
I was told there were 4.
We've seen tracks for 4 out there as well. Good work, Razor 3. Are you pursuing them? Over.
Oh yeah, we're hot on their trail. Razor 1 to intercept and sending Razor 2 to you. Over.
Copy that, Razor 3. Please contact me if you catch up to them. Over.
Will do. Razor 3 out.
Okay. Grid C-10 is here. Razor 3 is here, giving chase. Razor 1 is here. The search coordinator will move here, I'd say. While Razor 2 will come back this way to cut them off if they get past Razor 1.
Wow, they're really taking a risk by moving in the day like this.
Unless they plan on decoying us, like you said before.
You could be right. That's why I wish we had a team right here. That way, if they did try to trick us, we could catch them.
Why don't we be that team?
Give us 4 or 5 people, and we could be out there in an hour and a half.
Sounds good. I'll give you an advantage. You won't have to walk.
Are we getting a Jeep?
Nope, I need them here. You'll take those.
Mountain bikes!
Mountain bikes.
Top of the line in there, Day. We keep them in mint condition. Pick one and get ready. Ooh, here comes one of our young Vicks now. Hey there, Tokley. Tokley, that's your name, right? From the potato harvest? I have an assignment for you.
Yes, sir. It's Toby, sir. What's the assignment, sir?
I'm sorry, Toby. We don't have time to play sergeants and privates today, as much as I'd love to. Drop the sir for now, pick 3 of your pals, and go with Monica and David here. Pick out some mountain bikes and check your gear. You're hitting the trail in 5 minutes.
All right! Walter, Sean, Zalima, get a bike. We're going trail riding.
Oh, Pat, now you got them all nervous. This isn't the time.
Oh, come on, Monica. He's 19 years old. Males that age love it when an experienced adult takes charge. He's not nervous. He's just playing along. Anyway, I really hate that yes sir business they learn when they do the VIX training with Thomas. We're an egalitarian society. We can learn to kick butt in self-defense without buying into all that gasoline age hierarchy nonsense.
I guess you're right, but aren't you being a little too much?
There's no such thing as too much of me. Ask David.
What?
Anyway, here's your map. These lines are bike trails. We thought you might need them just for this scenario. You can use the trail to about here. After that, the ride gets pretty rough.
What if we get a flat?
You shouldn't if you stay on the trails. Those tires are pretty tough, but if you do, you'll have to swap in a new tube. Put 2 in each of your packs. Everybody here is really good at fixing flats.
Are you afraid of bicycles, David?
No.
Just checking.
Here's a radio. You'll be able to talk to me and any of the search teams. You can listen for the Corpies, too. Here's the frequency list. Your call sign is Razor 4.
All right, let's go. You ready, David?
Totally.
Good luck. We'll let you know if anything develops.
So, what do you think of trail riding?
Actually, it's pretty fun.
How are you two doing? Any tire problems?
Nope.
I'm fine.
Same here.
We should make our objective in about... Holy moly, what was that?
Sounded like it came from the west where Razor 3 should be.
I think you're right.
It didn't sound very big.
It wasn't. It sounded like a mine.
You have those?
No way! Never! What if a kid or an animal trips them? Even for a temporary perimeter guard, there's too many unknowns, and the environmental damage is unacceptable. But we know what they sound like from when we had to defuse the ring of them left around Gowan Field. The oil wars finish, and generations later, kids are still getting their legs blown off.
Toby's brother walked into one.
I'm sorry, Toby.
It's not your fault.
David, could the strike team have brought some along?
It's possible. There's only 4 guys, so they would take any advantage they can use.
I wonder if...
Razor 4, this is Porcupine, over.
I copy, Porcupine, over.
Razor 4 tripped a landmine, over.
I knew it! The bastards!
We heard it, over.
They have 2 wounded and are still pursuing, over.
Copy that, Porcupine, over.
Proceed as planned, the same coordinates, over.
Roger that. Razor 4 out.
Contact us when you get there. Porcupine out.
Sealy, any word yet?
Not a peep from the assault team.
What about Ortega?
Nothing.
I don't like this. It's been too long. Ortega should have at least checked in by now. He's supposed to be on his way home.
We've been listening for any crosstalk from the Aggies, but all we're getting is a high-powered transmission of some guy giving a political seminar. He also takes questions from people at the end of each lecture. We don't hear anything else.
What guy?
I don't know who, but he keeps naming someone called Noam Chomsky?
Bah!
What's wrong?
Can't you see? They're jamming the airwaves with Chomsky. They're totally on to us.
Who's Chomsky?
Chomsky was the ultimate anti-Friedmanite.
Friedman? You mean that guy whose picture you have in your office?
Yes. How much worse can it get?
I'm still optimistic, sir. It's too soon to give in.
You can afford to be optimistic, but I can't. Corporate Prime will roast me on a spit if this plan goes under.
Oh, sorry, boss.
Yeah, so am I.
David, hand me that map.
Here you go.
So we're here, and the mine must have been tripped there. If I were trying to avoid 3 search teams, and I'm up against a shoreline, I won't stand much of a chance by the time Skomer Vole and Razor Toot cut them off.
Okay, so what do you think the strike team's really doing?
I think they planted the mine, or mines, to prod the search teams into pressing the search along the river's edge clear to the dam.
I agree.
What they're really doing, then, is doubling back along the shoreline to the southwest. Then they'll cut across here, straight to us. They'll use these draws and divides as cover. Then they'll work their way back to this position, southeast of the dam, and hit it.
That's gonna take a lot of time. You really think they got enough energy for that? They gotta eat.
They could have food stashed. They could have planned this whole thing by now.
That's a lot of coulds.
Yeah, but what the search coordinator is pursuing seems too much like a ruse to me.
Nah, I know him. He'll figure out a trick like that before long.
I'm sure he will. But he can't afford to leave that approach undefended, and I wouldn't either. If it is a ruse and he detects it, he'll probably split up his forces even more to chase them this way, and maybe that's what they want him to do. They'll watch to see if he does split his group up and decide to slip through, then straight to the dam.
What now?
I say we work our way toward them. If I'm right, they should pop out on this spot on the map. See? Then we'll call in the rest of the teams and pin them down as best we can.
I'm all for that.
Yeah!
Okay, then. We should leave the bikes here. We can hide them in that brush over there. We'll hike to that hill and peek over the top and decide our next move.
Corporate Prime by Kevin Bayhouse. We'll continue next week on the Sagebrush Variety Show. You're listening to the Sagebrush Variety Show. sagebrushvariety.org. Political commentary and satire with an irreverent twist. From Boise, Idaho.
Homeland Security, Level Red. The price of security is eternal surveillance. If you have nothing to hide, then you won't mind if we sneak a little peek.
Hi, Allison.
You knew it was me calling. That must mean you finally found it in the budget to get caller ID for the office phones.
Yep.
I thought the new federal budgets didn't come out for 3 more months.
Well, I'm not sure I should tell you this, but our department won the interdepartmental foosball competition. And since I was most valuable player, I got to choose what the purse would go to.
And you chose caller ID for the office.
You know, the whole world has it. I don't see what's so wrong with the FBI having it, too. I swear, why even bother to make environmental or public corruption laws at all if radicals won't
even... Oh, come on, McGill. Don't be so defensive. Listen, if you're still sensitive about the hard time I gave you at the coffee shop, I'm calling to say I'm sorry.
I understand why you were angry. What happened to your friend was illegal and rooted in racism. It's a perfect example of what the agency is trying to move beyond.
McGill, I'm not sure there's much hope for the agency, but I believe you're doing your best.
Thanks. That means a lot to me.
I hear there's an FBI whistleblower involved in some of the material witness cases going on.
Really? You heard that?
Can I ask?
No.
How do you know what I'm going to ask?
I'd prefer you not ask me anything.
Ooh, this is getting all cloak and dagger. It's kind of stimulating.
You want to try to meet for coffee again?
Okay.
It's not a date.
Right.
1 o'clock.
Hey, Nick.
Hi.
Thanks for meeting me again. Coffee's on me this time. Fair trade, organic, Ethiopian, Yirgacheffe, right?
Thanks.
Oh, you already have a drink. What's in the can?
It's the world's first organic, all-natural energy drink.
All-natural, huh? Then why are your lips blue?
Blue agave. Read the ingredients.
Okay, there's no garbage in it. But still, you can order coffee, mate, or Waraná tea right here.
Yeah, but not simultaneously.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to be giving you a hard time, but I can't help myself when I see something like that. This feel-good alternative to the conventional energy drink that's probably better for you and might nominally be better for the environment, but still has a huge impact in terms of aluminum production and petroleum use for starters. I just have to say something.
I know, and I respect that, but I need my energy drink to catch the bad guys you tip me off to. I have to admit, though, the taste still grosses me out. Maybe I can wash it out with that Yirgacheffe.
Good idea. And you'll be needing your energy because I have a new tip for you.
Ooh, goody.
I don't have a lot of time to talk about it, so I'll have to go through these documents for the details. But a friend of mine has to work with a sleazoid in the procurement office at University of California. She's pretty sure that when companies are competing for a project, he'll go to one of the company reps and get a gift in exchange for showing them the other company's bids. This last time, it was a huge telecommunications contract, and she thinks he got a BMW out of the deal.
What? No bribe-taking politicians this month?
This is still public corruption. It's a public institution.
Isn't that your alma mater?
All right, so it's a little personal. But this isn't a grudge tip, if that's what you're getting at.
That wasn't what I was saying. I was just making conversation. Can I see that file? Hey, this is good stuff. Oh man, I can't wait to get started on it.
And if you get permission from the department to pursue it, you can get to go to San Francisco. The weather's nice this time of year. If you want some tips on sights to see or where to get a good vegan meal, I can let you...
Yeah, huh? Oh man, Sleaze is putting it nicely. Whoa, your friend did half the work for me.
Nick!
What?
If you can get your nose out of that file for a second, I'm trying to make conversation. I have to get ready for my flight tonight, so I can't keep you long.
Oh, where are you going?
Back east. I have a Bill of Rights Defense Committee meeting. I'm kind of nervous about the flight.
Afraid of flying? You know, so was my aunt, and she had this method I could tell you about.
I'm not afraid of flying. I'm afraid of the no-fly list.
Is there something I should know about you?
What? No! Nick, give me a break. You know about the no-fly list.
Yeah.
Well, then, don't be coy. The no-fly list includes the names of 14 of the September 11th hijackers. They are dead, right? Saddam Hussein.
Well, that's sloppy, but so what?
Bolivian President Evo Morales and Lebanon's parliamentary speaker Nabi Berri, Ted Kennedy, people involved in the Green Party. You used to be green. Don't you think that's kind of excessive?
I'm still registered to vote green. I just can't be active now that I'm an agent. Conflict of interest.
Right. Not to mention names shared by thousands of people, such as Gary Smith, John Williams, Robert Johnson. Little children get stopped.
Okay, I admit, I know about all that. The agency was told to put it together practically overnight. We all knew it was going to be a mess because basically they did a massive data dump and said, okay, anybody that's got a nexus to terrorism, let's make sure they get on the list. Better safe than sorry. Some people get inconvenienced, but it gets cleared up at the airport, a correction request is sent to Homeland Security, and their name is cleared.
It's more than an inconvenience, depending on how badly you need to get on that flight. I met the former executive director of the Fellowship of Reconciliation, which is an interfaith global peace organization. He's a 45-year-old Jesuit priest. He told me he flies just about every week. Since 9/11, he's taken a side at the boarding gate every single time and searched and questioned. One time, as soon as the attendant saw his boarding pass, she shouted at him, "You can't be here! You have to be searched!" All the passengers were backing away from him, and the flight was delayed while he was taken aside and thoroughly searched, with all the passengers watching. The assistant legal director for the Center of Constitutional Rights in New York was forced to pull down her pants in front of all the other travelers. Not once, but on three separate flights. When she demanded to know why she was being singled out, the airline agent at the gate told her to shut up or forget about getting on the flight, and told her, "The computer spit you out. I don't know why, and I don't have time to talk to you about it."
Okay, but are these things still happening to these people?
I don't know, but probably, since the bulk of the cases are never cleared up. Once you're on the no-fly list, you cannot get off. It's been 4 years, Nick, and the same idiocy is still happening. We both know, with some of your fellow agents, it's a fine line between a simple misunderstanding and weeks of detainment. What about Maher Arar, huh?
You'll be fine.
Can you check and see if I'm on the list?
No.
Why not? Can you check and fix it if I am and not tell me about it?
Allison, you'll be fine.
I take that as FBI talk for, yes, I promise to check up on it and make sure you're not hassled.
Don't.
Right, I won't. Wink, wink. I'm getting the hang of the secret spy talk. I really appreciate this.
I hope you're teasing me. Anyway, thanks for the tip. I promise I'll get right on it.
Mom, I just told you I already got through security. Everything's fine. If I was on the list, my friend got me off it. I have to fly, you know that. This is what I do. I can't do all my activism from one town. Not with the power the federal government has. Mom, I want to drink my orange juice before the flight. I gotta go. Bye.
You have a minute, ma'am?
What's this about?
My badge. This is Ms. Miller from JetBlue, the airline you're flying on today.
Yes. Nice badge. I know I'm flying on JetBlue. What's the problem?
People are feeling offended because of your t-shirt.
What? This? Offended? I'm very sorry if I offended anyone. I didn't know that this t-shirt would be offensive. But you do know what "We Will Not Be Silent" means. It's a statement attributed to a student resistance movement in Nazi Germany called the White Rose. It means we will resist a corrupt government that abuses its power and abandons the rule of law. Doesn't everyone agree that the Nazis were bad nowadays?
Ma'am.
My name is not ma'am. I'm Allison. Or Ms. Ami.
Ms. Ami, do you have any other t-shirts you can wear?
Why do you want me to take off my t-shirt? Isn't it my constitutional right to express myself in this way?
People here in the U.S. don't understand these things about constitutional rights.
I live in the U.S., and I understand it is my right to wear this shirt.
Excuse me, we thought you...
What? Because I'm not Lily White, you assumed I was foreign? Well, what does that have to do with anything? You're racially profiling me. That is what's obscene.
The t-shirt has Arabic writing on it.
It says the same thing in Arabic as in English. Obviously, it's a translation. How come you're asking me to change my t-shirt? I'm ready to change it if you tell me why I should. Do you have an order against Arabic t-shirts? Is there a law against Arabic script?
You can't wear a t-shirt with Arabic script and come to an airport. It's like wearing a t-shirt that reads, "I'm a robber," and going to a bank.
But the message on my t-shirt isn't offensive. It just says, "We will not be silent." I got this t-shirt from Washington, D.C. There's more than 1,000 t-shirts printed with the same slogan. You can order them over the internet.
We can't make sure that your t-shirt means, "We will not be silent." We don't have a translator. Maybe it means something else.
But you can see the statement is in both Arabic and English.
Maybe it's not the same message.
So, based on the fact that JetBlue doesn't have a translator, anything in Arabic is suspicious because maybe it'll mean something bad?
You don't have to take off your t-shirt. Just put it on inside out.
No, I refuse to put on my t-shirt inside out.
Let's reach a compromise. I'll buy you a new t-shirt and you can put it on over the one you're wearing.
I want to wear this t-shirt.
No, we can't let you get on the airplane with that t-shirt.
I'm ready to put on another t-shirt if you tell me what the law is that requires such a thing. I want to talk to your supervisor.
You don't have to talk to anyone. Many people called and complained about your t-shirt. JetBlue customers were calling before you reached the checkpoint, and customers called when you were waiting here in the boarding area.
Why won't you end this problem by just putting on a new t-shirt?
That sounds like nobody gets hurt.
What kind of t-shirts do you like? Should I get you an I Heart New York t-shirt?
Whatever, I just don't want to miss my flight.
No, we shouldn't ask her to go from one extreme to another.
Why do you assume I hate New York if I have some Arabic script on my t-shirt?
Look at this one. Isn't this one pretty?
I feel very sad that my personal freedom is being taken away like this. This t-shirt was given to me by a friend who got it for me, who grew up under authoritarian government in the Middle East. And one of the reasons he chose to move to the U.S. was that he didn't want an officer to make me change my t-shirt. I will pursue this incident today through a constitutional rights organization, and I'm sure we will meet again soon.
Okay.
Have a nice day. Hurry now. They're waiting for you.
Boarding pass.
Is everything okay?
Yes, sure. We just have to change your seat.
I want this seat. That's why I chose it online 4 weeks ago.
There's a lady with a toddler sitting there. We need the seat. Here you go. Seat 24A.
I had seat 3A.
You can go to the airplane now.
I can't believe I'm being assigned this seat in the back of the airplane. It smells like the bathrooms. I don't just hate that scented garbage you use by preference. I'm chemically sensitive. Do you realize those scents are highly toxic? That's why I originally had chosen a seat that would be far from the bathrooms. Do you want me to cough up blood the whole flight?
I'm sorry. We had no choice.
Baloney.
So, how was your trip?
Great. Didn't you hear? I was on Democracy Now.
I haven't been reading the news. I'm really busy on this case you tipped me off to. It's going to be great. I'm flying to San Francisco tomorrow.
Really? That's perfect, because I bought you a t-shirt. You can wear it on the flight.
It's nice. White Rose was cool.
Everyone's wearing them. Well, all my friends are. And a lot of people who heard about my story on Democracy Now. I was harassed for this shirt by Homeland Security, Nick. People are wearing it out of solidarity.
Oh.
Don't wimp out on me now. You said you'd wear it.
Listen, I'm not supposed to do anything political.
It's not political unless the fascists make it political. Please wear this shirt. If the Fed participates, it would mean so much. This isn't some big revolution. It's people demanding their basic rights. It's common sense.
I'll think about it.
Nick, if you do it, I will have a newfound respect for you. It will change our relationship. If you don't wear it, well, it'll change our relationship.
That's a lot of pressure. I need to think about it.
I don't understand why.
Because you're right. I'll wear it.
Thanks, Nick.
You don't need to thank me for doing the right thing.
Now you're just trying to impress me again.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
Stop teasing me.
Oh, come on. Don't be so sensitive. I'll buy you one of those stupid energy drinks and we can toast. To new friendships.
I'll drink to that, but I switched to this new bottled water, where part of the sales for every purchase goes to improving infrastructure in Africa and Indonesia.
Oh yeah, I heard about that. That's really nice, Nick. Honestly. But we need to talk about the limits of this whole activism through purchasing thing.
Okay, tonight, at 8, over dinner. I'm already packed for my flight.
Sounds great.
This was a dramatization, a comic dramatization. But in the world of audio theater, it is said that truth is stranger than fiction. Imagine if you will. No, don't imagine. See our links posted at sagebrushvariety.blogspot.com, if you will. A so-called no-fly list, hastily assembled weeks after September 11, 2001, that includes the name of dead people, elected officials of considerable reputation, people with very common names, and people with a history of protesting U.S. policy through entirely legal and nonviolent means. Over 5 years later, people on this list, or with the same names as people on the list, are still routinely inconvenienced, mistreated, abused, or humiliated, despite repeated attempts to clear their names. And for those with the luck to bypass a deeply flawed list and the confused security check-in personnel who carry it, there is still the risk of being wrongly profiled as a terrorist at any time before or during one's flight based on one's skin color, reading material, or fashion decisions, such as wearing an anti-Nazi t-shirt. Seem too silly to be true? Believe it.
Homeland Security, Level Red, was written by Robert McMinn and was performed and produced by the Sagebrush Variety Show with the help of a grant from the Green Institute and support from Radio Boise. Learn more about the topics in this show at sagebrushvariety.org. This week's Sagebrush Variety Show was conceived, written, performed, and produced by Robert McMinn, Kevin Bayhouse, April Hoy, and Gwen Sankirico, and was funded in part by a grant from the Green Institute. For more information on the content discussed on this program, visit our website at sagebrushvariety.org. Write to us at sagebrush@radioboise.org. Thanks for listening to the Sagebrush Variety Show.